United Lutheran Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast, conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more, with voices from around the corner and around the globe.
What is life like for a person who was born and raised a woman in Gaza, in Palestine, to come to the United States and spend the last 7 years? Hello, I'm Jerry Christensen. And this is the Seminary Explores. Our guest is Haya Mohana, which I'm not pronouncing correctly, but I'll do my best to respect the original pronunciation. And we're going to talk today about her career in the United States, having spent her young days in Gaza, Palestine. Beautiful area. It's hard to describe, but let's talk about you then. You can tell about your background, where you came from, how long you lived there, and why you came to the United States. Let's make it completely
absolutely.
Open.
Yeah, and thank you, Jerry, for having me here today. So I was born in Gaza, and I lived 17 years of my life in Gaza. I am the oldest of five. I have two sisters and two brothers. I grew up in a very close, tight family, but that's just kind of the theme of really Middle Eastern and Arab families. It's a very close Thai family. And to be honest with you, when I was growing up, a lot of things seemed normal to me, and I didn't realize how unnormal or abnormal they were until I came here. the fact that we are technically occupied territory comes with we're an open air prison. And so there is restrictions of travel, there is restrictions on food and electricity and water. And you grew up as a child, you learn how to grow up fast because you start learning terms about war and airfares and jets and knowing which F-16s and what kind of rockets they shoot pretty young. And you grew up having a tough skin for that pretty fast.
There's been open conflict between Israel and the Palestinians, especially in Gaza, which, if we can think geographically, is a gorgeous region, green and lush, in what is generally a desert-type area, and that's why everybody wants it. But it's isolated, isn't it? It's predominantly Palestinian, an enclave, we would call it.
It's one of the few areas that have such a high concentrated of Palestinians, I would say. And that's just, at some point in 2007, there were, Israelis kind of controlling the borders and a little bit into the Gaza Strip, and then they kind of pulled back a little bit. But Gaza kind of remains this, there's no control of Israelis over it versus other areas in other Palestinian territories.
You're occupied, but are there guard posts and a presence of the Israeli military inside?
No, not in between us.
Threats are constantly.
Yes, absolutely. And we feel it in other ways. We have blockade on electricity. So, for example, I grew up for most of my life, I would say, especially the late end of it, with 4 to 6 hours of electricity a day. That's all you get, and you don't get them at the same time. Sometimes you get them in the morning, sometimes you get them at night. And so I remember my mom would just wake up at midnight when the electricity come just to do a laundry wash and, just to kind of get the stuff going. And so that's how we grew up, and that's how we felt the blockade and the siege, aside from the wars that would happen and the clashes from now and then as well.
Your native language is Arabic.
Arabic, yeah.
And you speak fluent English. Was that because of the great education you got at Gettysburg College, or did you have a little bit of a head start?
I wish I could give it to Gettysburg College, but on that one, no. So we started learning English in kindergarten just along with the Arabic. So when we were starting learning the Arabic alphabets, we learned the English alphabets with it too. But the school education focused a lot on the grammar part and maybe a little bit of the reading, but nothing on the speaking part. So for me, my dad was such a great fond of the English speaking language, and he himself studied in England. And so he, from a very young age, started making us watch English shows, cooking shows, travel shows, even Pink Panther in English, just any kid's. And we wouldn't get anything of it. But and so I grew up listening to a lot of it and picking up the words as I just at the end of it, it became my own passion. And I for a lot of people start recognizing that it become your freedom ticket. Mm-hmm. If you have such a strong English speaking, you know, skills and great education grades, it's your freedom ticket. You can apply to scholarships, you can go to colleges, you can start talking to people outside of Gaza, which is a very isolated area. And that was the only way people started understanding us. And you see this lately, actually, like, you know, kids my age and maybe younger on social media speaking English, that's the only reason Gaza has become a spotlight in the last couple of years on social media, because these kids are holding their phones and recording and taping and then communicating back to the world in English about what's going on. And so that was kind of how everybody learns English, really.
Yeah. And it's curious to me, because a conservative religious family in any religion around the world would say that television is an outcrop of a degraded secular society, and your folks had to make a choice, because as you learned English from the Pink Panther, you're also learning Western.
Yeah, exactly.
Mid-Eastern, different kinds of mores and customs and so on. So, but they're willing to take that chance.
Yeah, you kind of grew up watching, you know, action movies
and learning
the curse words.
Yes, the best of American television, thank you. How did you, under what circumstances did you leave Palestine, and
it was a struggle. So for me to planning to go to college here and come to study, it was like almost a 2 year to 3 year process of planning and thinking about it. And really at that point, there is no college, what do you call them, like counselors, you know, at home where you can go and ask your high school counselor where you should go and whatnot. And so it was on the children to make that choice. And for us as students, you start looking, but there's so many universities here, and you get lost. And that's where LEO, the organization who helps Palestinian students to get education here in the U.S., came into play by, you know, kind of working with my application. And they go locally to colleges asking them for financial aid. And it happened that Gettysburg College accepted me. And they came back and they said, okay, you're going to Gettysburg College. And I said, who? Because, you know, like back home, it's like MIT, Harvard.
It's
like Gettysburg. It's like, where is that? and that was it, really. And from that point on, even though they got you acceptance, there was so many physical restrictions on land to get outside of Gaza. We don't have an airport. We don't control our borders. And so that means we can't fly out. The only way you could leave Gaza or go into Gaza is by land. And the only two sides you can do that from is the Egyptian or the Israelis. And the Egyptians just is closed and has so much struggles in it. So your most safest bet, I would say, the Israeli sides, but it's not guaranteed. Mm-hmm. And so you can, and you go stand on the border and you say, here's my, you know, visa, here's my college acceptance. And this is, by the way, you haven't booked any flight tickets. Like, you just imagine this. And then you go to the Israeli border and they can stand there and say, no, not today. And they can say, okay, you can go. Yeah. And there's no reasoning behind yes or no or why. For me, I was denied once. Then, no, go back, you know. And then when I tried to come out, I really was not thinking I'm coming out. And I didn't even get a chance to say goodbye to my dad because I just thought, you know, I'm coming back. Like, I'm not really going through. And what happens is you stand on that checkpoint and they say, okay, you're through. And the traveler just have to go. You can't go back. There's no connection to going home or saying goodbye to anybody.
It's gone. A wave. And
it's just kind of a little bit of a little bit less than a mile of this just, you know, fenced walk.
You just walk
with your luggage. There's cameras on you and you get to the Israeli side by the end of it, search you and whatnot. And then you'll be on a bus straight to Jordan. And the whole thing takes about 8 hours. If you were just to take your car and drive it, it's a 2 hour drive, actually. But after you get to Jordan, that's when you book your tickets to fly out of Jordan to the U.S. So, you know, imagine the cost booking your flight 3 or 4 days beforehand and flying across the country to come here. And of course, you know, while you're in that process, people need to be on land, pulling you through. Like, it's not just an easy going into the border and saying, oh, I just want to go in. And people are like, you can go ahead.
Sure. Bring your money. Come ahead.
Yeah, exactly. No. And you can pay. And then they go, no, and it's non-refundable.
And you were only 16, 17 at the time.
When I did
and,
that,
and
yeah.
And when you said goodbye to your parents, you said goodbye. You haven't seen them since.
I haven't seen them since.
Why not go back and visit them once in a while?
You know, I wish we can talk about Gaza like that. But, you know, the fact that we don't control the borders, you can be on the border for 2 to 3 days just to get into Gaza when you are a Gazan yourself. And that's just getting into your home. Imagine leaving out of Gaza. It's impossible. I mean, I was lucky getting out because I was backed up by so many organizations that had American connections. And even with that, we had to pull teeth and strings, you know. But that option even is not that strong anymore, and it doesn't work all the time. And so if you go in, you might not come out for a couple of years, who knows? And so for me, there was always the option of, okay, I'm going to go home after my college, but I might not be able to come back and complete my college education, and to what cost I want to take that for.
We're talking to Haya Mohana, who is a Palestinian living in Gaza, the Gaza Strip, and is currently in the United States, where she has studied for 4 years and now is employed for 3 years. I'm Jerry Christensen, and you're listening to the Seminary Explorers. Why employment? You were brought here by the organization known as LEO, who does this as a part of their, as a very much is their mission. And part of the understanding is that once you have an education, or during that education, you'll have an internship somewhere. Mm-hmm. And how long was that internship to last, and how has that been going?
So usually most international students are guaranteed that 1 year with their visas to work. And most students will take that opportunity to work, or sometimes we'll go straight after to graduate school. I knew that when I finished college, I was A, mentally drained, that I did not and was not capable to go straight into master's and handle that load. But I also started knowing that I am a lot more hands-on and experienced person, and that drove me and gave me a lot of passion. And so I knew that I really wanted to take advantage of that 1 year to explore what can I do and where I can find myself. And that's kind of how it started. And then because I studied the STEM, meaning science, technology, engineering, mathematics, one of these majors, mine was mathematical economics, I got to extend that up to 3 years. And that's kind of what I'm doing. But yeah, I mean, the chance of going home, if you think about it, I mean, you know, when the Great Recession happened to America in 2008, the unemployment rate was like 10%, and everybody was losing their minds, right? Back home, people my age right now, unemployed is 62%.
62%.
2%. And so that's just between people my age, and we're the working class, you know what I mean? So imagine what is the overall unemployment rate. And so for somebody like me to think about going home in a field that doesn't even exist, there's no such thing as mathematical economics. There's no economy in Gaza because we're not independent. Everybody controls something, you know, that we have. And so for me to go home and think about going home, it's kind of like, okay, there's not a job. I cannot contribute to my family when I was at home. I maybe get a job as a volunteer or as an English teacher or something in an English center. You know, that's the best I could probably do. But it will never be in the field that I'm so passionate about and I feel I can give so much back through it. And that's why it's just kind of the program encourages you to bring what you've learned and go home and do it. And some people have that resources. Some people target areas as a humanitarian and they go back and do that, you know.
Yeah.
But some people prefer to do it from the outside, like me, where I felt I benefited Gaza by talking about the story, by bringing light to it a lot more than if I would have been inside of it. And there's not really resources to apply my field of studies there.
Yeah. As a Muslim woman, what restrictions, excuse me for being so ignorant on this subject, you do have some restrictions or not, and how do they apply when you come to a Western culture?
Mm-hmm.
That's a poor way of asking who you are, what your identity
is. Right. I mean, I think when it comes to religious restrictions and whatnot, we can sit here until tomorrow and talk about it, because there are things that, you know, are required by the religion itself, but there are things that are required culturally. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And those, the lines are blurred and you don't know which is which sometimes. And so I would say back home growing up, I never felt belittled because I was a woman, let's put it that way. But I definitely sometimes felt that I couldn't do what I wanted to do or like what my brother wanted to do. And it could be as simple as, for example, taking a bike and biking in the street or going on a run in the street just for an exercise. Those things you cannot do at home as a girl, but you could do as a boy. And for me, I think that was always a struggle growing up, is like, why can he do that, but I cannot do that? And it kind of threw me growing up into this tomboy, like, I want to learn how to waveboard, which I did. I want to learn how to play basketball, which I did. And, I was kind of known to be such a tomboy and not a girl. And it wasn't until I came here when I started softening up a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, and so I would say that kind of stuff at home where, and the older you get, the more eyes are on you because you have become now a lady and you should be acting in certain manners and you can't be out for certain times and days. And so that type of restrictions.
Dating, for example, relationships can't.
No, I mean.
They're pretty restricted.
Yeah,
you just can't go.
And in the religion itself, there's no such thing as dating before marriage. Like in the religion, love comes after marriage. And so you kind of, it's not to say you should be arranged marriage or choosing your partner, but you start exploring that emotional connection with somebody when you're ready to make a commitment to it. Let's just put it that way, really. And so that type of restriction exists as well, which you probably know that it doesn't here. So
it doesn't, but at any rate, it's certainly a lot different, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly.
And if you have not yet decided to stay here permanently, but you are in the middle of that kind of decision, and you laid out the reasons why the decision will not be easy. For one thing, you may have to say goodbye to your family for much long-term basis. On the other hand, if you do go back, your serviceability mm-hmm. to your home country is going to be limited because of the kind of skills you have. Whereas if you were a physician, mm-hmm. For example, yes, immediately.
A lot of people at home want to be doctors and lawyers and engineers because it sounds so good, right?
Not true here.
Yeah, and it's the same thing here.
Everybody wants to be a radio interviewer.
Guess what? I came here and it was the same thing. but there was just such a surplus of doctors and engineers at home because everybody wants to do that. And not just that, but everybody's parents want them to do that as well. It's a reputation thing. And so there's a surplus and doctors at home are unemployed. And so, yeah. And to take in mind, too, we're thinking like, oh, there are jobs are open and there are resources. I mean, when we get into war, we run out of medical supplies that we can't even service the people that are being hurt. And so let alone having somebody being employed and working and having the resources sufficient to do their job and train.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Being a Muslim woman in the United States, where Muslims are in a kind of minority, so everybody's in some kind of minority, but the access, say, to places of worship, mm-hmm. Is that really important to a Muslim woman?
I think so. I think it's a personal importance as well. The nice thing about worshiping is you can practice it in private too, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to go to a mosque to do that as well. And so you could do that from the convenience of your home to pray and worship, but you could also go to a mosque. And there's a couple around this area, a couple in Frederick and Harrisburg, and a couple around that you could go to. And it's up to kind of, I think I've seen most of us who come here at least want to stay in touch with that side of them, and they want to go worship as often as they want. And some people want to do that every Friday. Some people want to do that every, holiday, for example, our holidays.
Just like Christians.
Yes,
it's
we're not that different, People think so.
No,
just like,
we're
no.
not that different on that score.
No.
There is the issue that you're going to have to, if you want to maintain a religious identity, it's going to have to be done In an ocean of non-Muslims, at least for the moment. And so you're going to have to establish your own identity, in a sense, within yourself.
Yeah, and that's kind of been the hardest part, because I think I started coming to realizing that in the last couple of 2 years when I was out of college. I have, you know, now I'm working, so I do have a purpose, but after I get home, I don't have to go to the library and study more. Mm-hmm. You know, I can do something for myself. And I think those are the areas where you give your mind the freedom to think and be like, well, what do I want? You know, what's my identity? What's my values? What do I value from the religion? And what do I want to keep? And, you know, all those things. And so I think I started embracing that pretty much in the last 2 years, about this idea that I am practicing a religion that it's in a minority. Mm-hmm. And how do I mix and hybrid that with the life and the other majority religion that people are living here as well?
We want to give our thanks, Mahana, to the organization known as LEO as we close out this program, Leonard Education Organization, which brought you here along with, at the moment, as many as 56 students mm-hmm. to the United States, and guide you through the process, and even before that, get you into an American college, and then watches over you as you leave. It's an incredible organization, doing a little in a large area of need, and doing it remarkably well. And so we say thanks to them for bringing you
absolutely
here.
And I am loyal always to them. Yeah. You know, it's kind of, I say everything that's happening to me is because of them and thanks to them. And I think really Leo's uniqueness comes with that personal touch.
Personal touch, yes.
I think there's a lot of organizations that exist, like, you know, the same mission as Leo is to bring education to a sect of nationality or students or whoever. But I think the very unique thing about Leo is this personal touch, because, you know, when we come here as international students, you become confused a lot, you get lost a lot, it's nice to have somebody who doesn't judge you, who understands both cultures. And that's kind of what Leo is. They understand the Palestinian Arab mentalities and cultures, but they understand what people go through here and how it works here as well. And so to have this non-judgmental view to say it's normal what you're going through, here's what you might find helpful, you know, and that really can go a long way for somebody who came here all on their own, you know, like us, and don't know who to talk to. You know, who would I talk to about homesickness? It's like my parents won't understand it. People here, you know, cannot relate, but just will sympathize, and that's about it. And so who do I talk to? And that's where Leo comes in that personal touch, and holds people to that success very well. And I'm forever grateful for them.
Haya Moana is a Muslim woman born and raised in Gaza, Palestine, now living and working in the United States. And we found out a great deal today about what it's like for such a person to be in the United States and trying to serve both of these cultures at the same time, and quite successfully. Thank you. I'm Jerry Christensen for the Seminary Explorers. Have a very good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explorers, a production of United Lutheran Seminary with campuses in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We invite you to visit our website at unitedlutheranseminary.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of United Lutheran Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.